If you like the Young Turks podcast, I think you'll love a lot of the podcasts on the TYT network. Old School, it's one of my favorites, one of the favorites for a lot of the listeners. Please check that out, subscribe, share it. That makes a big difference, and give it a 5-star rating. Thank you. All right, welcome to the Young Turks. Great Monday show ahead with you guys. Alonzo Bowden's here. I'm Jake Huger, John Iderola. Excellent crew here for you guys. Later in the show, Hassan Piker and Brett Ehrlich are gonna join us. And after that, I believe our 9th presidential candidate is going to be in studio.
Jeez.
Congressman Tim Ryan. Now, this ought to be a doozy. Congressman Ryan was among our favorite congressmen for about a decade on the Young Turks. But recently, he took a little bit more of a conservative turn on the campaign trail. He's a little bit more progressive. So, buckle up. I don't know
what we're gonna get. He's your dark mirror. As you've turned one way, he's turned the other.
I don't know.
I like how you have him numbered. Is that how we're identifying him now? So he's 9th, like the, and do we number him from when they announce? Is that how we do it?
Well,
no, I mean, it's as good a way as any to keep up with who's who. So if that's it, I gotta get my scorecard.
Well, yeah, that's not a bad idea, but only in appearance on the Young Turks.
Yes.
So if you didn't appear on the Young Turks, sorry, I guess you're not a candidate.
Okay. Oh, actually, related to that, Marianne Williamson, who has previously been, I believe, on both this show and the Damage Report, she will actually be in the studio on the Damage Report tomorrow morning. We're going to be talking about her campaign, the big issues, all that.
So speaking of folks that are coming in on Old School this week, Matt Walsh is going to be joining us. I've been watching him on Veep this year, as always. Just fantastic. He's doing a great job in the print edition of BuzzFeed. That's his character on Veep. And then wait, hold on. I know you're buckled up because I already told you to buckle up with these guests. On Thursday, Peter Dow, the most significant critic of Bernie Sanders in the 2016 elections.
And now a total bro.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Come and see. Come and see. So look, and a lot more. So don't miss any of this week's programming. It's amazing. And of course, last night we had our Game of Thrones review. We would talk more about that, but Alonzo hasn't seen it yet. And
no, it's okay. Don't worry about spoiling it for me. I'm gonna watch it anyway, so it doesn't. Doesn't matter to me. I saw the very end of the series. You want to know who wins? I'm kidding.
And by the way, we did predictions for just the members as we did last time around. So make sure you check that out, tyt.com/join. All right. Well, there's a lot to get to in today's program, including Trump and Democratic candidates, whether they appeared or didn't appear on the Young Turks, making a lot of news. So let's get to it, John. Take it away.
Well, we're actually going to be starting. You wanted to talk about the TYT Watchdogs Party.
Okay, yeah, I'll do that. Okay, so this weekend we had the TYT Watchdog Correspondents Dinner Party, and so that is, of course, juxtaposed to the White House Correspondents Dinner Party, and in fact, it's right across the street on a rooftop, so we can keep watch on them. And it was just great. That's Jim Obergefell, by the way, the lead plaintiff in the case that legalized gay marriage. That's Ari, who is the chief of staff for Bernie Sanders, as Congressman Jamie Raskin. Ida Chavez and Ryan Grimm were early in were in the picture earlier. They're from The Intercept. So young journalists and producers from all the different networks. Now, you don't have to be progressive to be there, but there were a lot of progressives, obviously, a number of campaigns, including the Yang Gang were there. The woman who created the Tough Ojeda ads, she was there. We will introduce you guys to her a little bit later as this show goes on. And so I love that we do a party on that same weekend where we celebrate great journalism that's supposed to watch over the government and not just kowtow to it. So, and we every year honor a person who's done extraordinary journalism. And this year was Julie K. Brown of the Miami Herald. She broke the Epstein story as it relates to Trump's cabinet official, Alex Acosta. Let me tell you the exact title of it. It was How Alex Acosta Helped Engineer a Plea Deal That Shielded Jeffrey Epstein. Groundbreaking story, very important. And has now gotten people to take a second look at that case, which is devastating. So if you're watching this later, we'll have the link to that article in the description box below. Please read it. She did great journalism. Super proud to give her that award for excellence in journalism. And so that's what we were celebrating over the weekend. And by the way, one more shout out, and that's to you guys, our viewers, because you created the Amplify program by buying membership, Young Turks membership, to members of the press so that they could hear a progressive alternative. Unfortunately, you go on television, and we're gonna talk about it later in today's program, but there's not a lot of progressives on there. I mean, there's a lot of Meghan McCain's doing false equivalencies, and they're brought on to do those false equivalencies, whereas there could be roaring progressives. I did go on C-SPAN on Sunday, and I did roar a little bit. You should check that out. But that should be every day, and it shouldn't be just me. It should be progressives all up and down the lineup. We're now obviously a significant political force. The country overwhelmingly agrees with us, and we should be represented on television, but often we are not. But for the folks that attended, you guys got membership for people from HuffPost, Hardball with Chris Matthews, The Hill, CBS News, Business Insider, and the list goes on. So wow, thank you for doing that, because that is what amplifies the progressive message. So you were there in essence as well with us that night, and we appreciate everything you've ever done for us, and we would have nothing of the Young Turks if it weren't for our members. And if you would like to become a member, tyt.com/join, and obviously, we are too strong together. Okay, all right, now let's do it.
Okay, let's turn to the unfortunately big news of the weekend. This Saturday, on the last day of the Jewish holiday of Passover, a man entered a synagogue in a suburb of San Diego and opened fire on those inside. While that was going on, he killed one woman and three others were injured. Rabbi Yonah Frodkin identified the woman as Lori Kay. Kay was at the synagogue to pray for her mother, who passed away in November. Witnesses said Kay jumped in the line of fire to protect the synagogue's founding rabbi, Israel Goldstein, whose index fingers were injured. Another man was shot in the leg as he led children to the safety of a playroom. Two children were so well hidden, officials did not find them until 45 minutes after the shooting. And so in these sorts of incidents, it is customary for the president to weigh in. Obviously, Donald Trump has a bit of a checkered history when it comes to events like this, but here he is addressing the shooting.
Tonight, America's heart is with the victims of the horrific synagogue shooting in Poway, California, just happened. Our entire nation mourns the loss of life, prays for the wounded, and stands in solidarity with the Jewish community. We forcefully condemn the evil of anti-Semitism and hate, which must be defeated. Just happened.
And I appreciate him saying that, although with the least passion that he's ever said anything in his life.
Yeah, well, he was on prompter there. They're like, look, God knows what this guy will say if we don't write this out for him, and we can't risk that in this kind of situation. So he went on to praise law enforcement there for getting the guy, the shooter. Then when he was off prompter later, and the real Donald Trump, he called the FBI and Department of Justice scum because they were pursuing him in a legal case. So, yeah, praising law enforcement when it's beneficial to him and attacking law enforcement when they uncover his crimes. Okay, but obviously the major issue is the issue of anti-Semitism in this case. So this happens 6 months to the day after the Tree of Life shooting in Pittsburgh, which was the worst anti-Semitic attack in United States history, 11 killed in that shooting. Now, there's apparently a debate as to whether Donald Trump is encouraging these guys, because you know he called the rabbi that was shot there, who was incredibly heroic. He tried to calm the rabbi, tried to calm the shooter down, calm his, the people in the synagogue down. And you know what he did after he was shot? And they had obviously the guy had run away at that point. He continued to speak to his congregation, and they had to. He wouldn't stop. He wouldn't go to the hospital until he was finished. So incredible heroism. He had nice things to say about Donald Trump after their call. But the problem is not whether Donald Trump, on any given time, is decent to one Jewish person. Like, wow, okay, great. I'm glad he did that, because he does bungle those calls from time to time, and apparently he didn't in this case, and was, according to the rabbi, genuinely empathetic. But the real issue is, what is he saying publicly? What is he encouraging? I'm never going to get past it. You should never get past it. And in fact, he doubled down on it recently when they asked him about Charlottesville. it's not like he said it ahead of Charlottesville, and then he didn't know they were gonna chant the Jews will not replace us. He didn't know they were gonna chant other Nazi chants like blood and soil. And he didn't know they were gonna kill someone. And well, okay, afterwards when they did, and he said, boy, man, I really condemn them. I didn't know that was good. No, he said there was very fine people on the Nazi side after the rally, given a choice to walk those comments back just a couple of days ago. He said, no, what I said was said perfectly. So when you encourage that kind of anti-Semitism and the chickens come home to roost here, no, you don't get a pass on it. You don't. And how many synagogues have to be attacked? So 4 years in a row now, anti-Semitism, violent anti-Semitic attacks have increased. In 2017, they went up by 57%, I believe, according to the Anti-Defamation League. And so it goes on and on. It's not an accident, and it's not a coincidence. Look, we're gonna get more into the different layers of problems and anti-Semitism that Donald Trump has. But the shooting happened right around the time that Trump is doubling down on Charlottesville, saying that he said it perfectly. How many synagogue shootings does there have to be before somebody gets this madman under control? He keeps egging on the craziest people that believe him into doing these things. And I'll tell you why they target Jews after I let everybody chime in here and we give you a little bit more of the facts. But there is a real reason why, even though Trump mainly talks about Muslims, he says anti-Semitic things, obviously, as I just explained here, and we got more. And he mainly targets Latinos. So why do so many of these guys go after Jews? I'll explain in a sec. But
You know, the thing about this, there's so many things to this story, right? For one thing, it wasn't just the doubling down on Charlottesville. He had just done the NRA rally, you know, and then another AR-15 is used. And it would have been a mass shooting, but apparently the story is the gun jammed. So that's why more people didn't get shot. So thankfully the guy's gun didn't work, or we'd be talking about who knows how many people killed, you know. And with Charlottesville, this is how their mind works, as far as I can tell. This is where the separation is. He says, well, I wasn't encouraging the Nazis for the anti-Semitism. I was encouraging the racists for their support of Robert E. Lee. You know what I mean? Like, to him, that's a separation. Like, no, I didn't like the Nazi. I don't like the anti-Semitist Nazis, but I like those racist Nazis. Those are my kind of Nazis. You know, it's and the people following him make this same insane separation, right? It's like the lie about the Southern heritage thing. And the other thing is, when you get into that racism, that KKK Southern racism, et cetera, they don't talk about, they were anti-Jew also. It wasn't like they just hated black people. They hated Jews as much. And they try to, I don't know, clean it up or separate it, you know? And like you said, when he's on prompter, there are people sitting there backstage cringing, like, please just read the words. Yeah. Don't say what you really feel, because everyone knows. And there's just, you know, this huge denial, and that trick they use, that when you bring up race or anti-Semitism, you're the bad guy. Like, well, why would you? Oh, you're gonna make it anti-Semitic? Because I was talking about prayers for the victims, you know what I mean? So now you're the bad guy because you brought up the hate or the Nazi connection and so on. Yeah. And all of this, it's all techniques, and it all works. There's nothing genuine behind it. It is horrible. And just one more thing on a quick note, just on a personal level, like how this story hit. I was in Halifax last week. I'm doing a comedy festival, and I flew home Saturday. Friday, me and a couple of guys up in Canada, we were talking about the gun thing, and they were talking about the United States and the guns and how insane it is. And I was like, look, I don't even know. I don't have an answer. I can't explain to a Canadian, you know, why in the United States you can go down the street, buy an AR-15, and go shoot up, fill in the blank, right? And then I get off the plane, and it's happened again, like the next day. I don't know what our society, I don't know, you know, what's gonna be too much, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where's the line? We've crossed every line you can imagine.
So you brought up a lot of things there. Let me quickly address a lot. So last night we were reviewing Game of Thrones, and I just happened to be sitting next to Ida Rodriguez, who was checking the news as we were watching the show. And she said, oh, there's another shooting. And then halfway through the show, there was another shooting. Now, you guys probably didn't hear about those. They weren't, because they weren't massacres. So like just regular shootings where it's a horrible tragedy would be big news in another country. It just gets washed out here because there's so many shootings per day. We can't keep up with them. And what did Donald Trump do later in the rally? Celebrated guns and said, oh, the Democrats are going to take your guns away.
Yeah.
You just said you were concerned about the shooting at the synagogue that was done with an AR-15. Then you turn around and go, these goddamn Democrats are going to take your guns away. And then you can't walk into a synagogue and start shooting everybody.
Yeah.
So that's just the reality of guns. On the issue of Jewish Americans, look, I know that with the trick that they play, the one that Alonzo referred to, when Donald Trump says there's very good people on the side of the people who are chanting Nazi chants, they find that to be an acceptable thing to say. When we point out that he thought there was very fine people on the Nazi side, they go, oh, you're playing the anti-Semitism card. No, that's a card that you, if that card exists at all, race card, anti-Semitism card, you can only say that if it's not legitimate, if it's like a made up situation. But here, synagogues are being shot. Donald Trump did say there was very fine people on the Nazi. What he said was the problem, not us pointing out what he said. Mm-hmm. And by the way, most people know that. And it's like Alonzo said, it's a trick. And they think they're being clever. They're like, oh, that's great. You know, we'll get to hate on blacks and Jews and Muslims, etc. And then if you complain about it, we'll pretend it's your problem for complaining. It's not very clever at all. And Now, to give you a sense, one more thing for now on Charlottesville. This was a white supremacist and racist rally from its original conception. And so we're not like, I know conservative heads are explicit. You guys call it that all the time. No, they called it that. It was so explicit that even the Proud Boys, Gavin McGinnis of the Proud Boys said, man, don't go there. Whether you agree or don't agree, that'll be used against you for going to a thing that is clearly racist and white supremacist. Even the massively crazy right-wing violence celebrating Proud Boys were like, that thing is toxic, do not attend. So everybody knew what they were going for. And then I'll get to Robert E. Lee a little bit later, because his comments on Lee are outrageous and people should know the real Lee.
Yeah, well, and we talked about that quite a bit on Friday's show. And look, on the Unite the Right, I've seen the posters that were put out to advertise for it. You can look them up right now. It is immensely clear what the point of it was, and also what the point of it was not. Because in all of these posters that are talking about white identity and using iconography of fascist movements and things like that, on most of them, I never saw any reference to the statue. It was just about reinforcing white identity, saying that we're not gonna be replaced by whatever demographic trends. I like that you pointed out the jamming. I actually had not seen that. It's interesting because we were told all the time that the gun doesn't matter, it's the person. Why are you focusing on the weapon? But that's like a hypothesis, and an experimental condition is jamming the gun, and it certainly seems like the killing slows down after that. It certainly seems like the gun is an important part, but we're gonna keep pretending that they would do the same with a stick or whatever. One of the things that bothers me the most about Donald Trump and his philosophy running our government is not just that I believe that it's deeply, deeply anti-Semitic. And not just that he doesn't really seem to care when an incident like this happens. I mean, you've seen him speak passionately and you saw the video that we showed you. Did that reek of Trump passion? Not to me. But there's two other things too. It is, how seriously will they take it in terms of government policy and communication? What will they do about these sorts of events? And we already know that before the events happened, they disbanded areas of the FBI and other investigative bodies in the executive department that would look into right-wing and far-right violence. So they decided, no, we are going to lay down our weapons and our ability to track down these groups, and we're gonna make it more likely that these sorts of events will happen in the future. And then you have after the attack, when we're concerned about what's feeding it, they're concerned, but not about that. So a little bit later on in the show, we're gonna have how Meghan McCain attempts to divert responsibility and attention from the actual people committing these attacks to someone else. When it comes to Kellyanne Conway, look at the pretzels she twists herself in to make sure that you're thinking about everyone other than Donald Trump and everyone other than the people who are actually perpetrating this violence, as you'll see.
Does President Trump still think that white nationalism is not a- growing threat around the world? Is he reconsidering that?
Well, the irony is that he condemned white nationalism and neo-Nazis and the KKK during the Charlottesville incident.
My question about this incident, since you brought it up, is who were these very fine people? Because Friday night, the rally was...
Let me set the stage here.
It was called
the
Unite the Right rally, and it was formed by people like Richard Spencer, who is a white supremacist. Friday night was the Tiki Torch March. Jews will not replace us.
With horrible people.
Right.
People could see them on
Saturday,
the
Heather Heyer was killed. Who are the very fine
Heather
people
Heyer
he's talking
was,
about?
Heather Heyer was murdered, and her murderer has been brought
but
to justice.
But who were the very fine people?
He was talking about the debate over removing statues and renaming.
So he wasn't talking about the weekend at all. He was just talking about
talking
the
about
theoretical discussion.
In fact, he condemned them in no uncertain terms, unequivocally. Go and pull the full comments. He condemned them over time.
President Trump
said
he didn't think white nationalism was a growing threat around the world. And I'm asking.
He does think it's a threat. And there's no question it's a threat.
He does think it's a threat.
Yes, of course he thinks it's a threat. That's why he condemned it in no uncertain terms. And
no, he said 6 weeks ago, I don't really think it's a threat.
No, they're saying a growing threat. But it is a threat.
Is it a growing threat?
It's horrible wherever it is.
Okay, so really fast on that. Before the attacks, they take out the groups in government that would investigate these sorts of things and stop them from happening. Afterward, look at how much effort they are putting into refusing to acknowledge that it's a big issue. You have a synagogue shooting, not a big threat. More synagogues shot internationally, not a big threat. Another synagogue shooting here, not a big threat. At this point, just like if anything, just to reassure people in that community that you care at all about whether they live or die, say that it's a massive threat and you're taking it seriously.
So Kellyanne Conway is a known liar. And so she says, check the tape. So then Tapper quotes her from the tape. She's like, well, okay, that was inconvenient. So yeah, he had it on the spot. And on the Charlottesville, he didn't say there was very fine people at a different rally. He definitely, when we have checked the tape and we've shown you the tape, he definitely said it about the Charlottesville rally. And Jake Tapper's question coincidentally happened to be the same exact thing I asked on C-SPAN on Sunday morning. I said, I'm still challenging Donald Trump to name one fine person from that rally. Who is it? And there are no fine people at that rally. So I would get back to Robert Lee for a second, then I want to really get to why they target Jews so much. So look, we did videos on it already. I don't want to believe it. I just want to, if you haven't seen those videos, Robert E. Lee was a slaveholder, personally whipped his own slaves, and then would pour toxins into their open wounds after whipping them, and would not exchange prisoners if they were black prisoners. At the Battle of the Crater, murdered every single black Union soldier who had surrendered at that battle. And killed, was a commander of the traitors who killed hundreds of thousands of Americans because they so desperately wanted to own other human beings. Robert E. Lee is not a good guy, not at all. You could argue as the commander of the traitorous Confederate Army, he was the biggest enemy America has ever had, and certainly on body count, and the biggest defender of slavery there has ever been. He fought, he risked his life to make sure you could keep black people as property. So don't tell me you're interested, very fine people who want to keep statues of Robert E. Lee. No, they should all be torn down. Should we also have statues of other American enemies all over the South, like Osama bin Laden and Heinrich Himmler? Which other American enemies would you like to put up as statues in the South? No deal, no deal at all. I don't agree to a bin Laden statue, and I don't agree to a Robert E. Lee statue.
Well, you brought up all the killing of black people. You have to remember that Robert E. Lee and the white people at that time didn't think of black people as human. So he didn't think of it as whipping humans, killing humans. I mean, they just didn't think of us as human life. We were property. So the people who defend this, the people who talk about the Southern heritage, they just deny that. They just deny that reality. When they talk about the Southern heritage, it's like, well, the Southern heritage is racism. It's horrible racism. It's abuse, murder, rape, etc. You know, Thomas Jefferson had a black girlfriend. No, he didn't. He owned a slave. Like, he raped a slave. She didn't have a choice. She couldn't say, well, no. You know what I mean? So there's that. Now, getting to the Kellyanne Conway thing, and this is the problem they have is they have to do their wink to their supporters, right? So the funniest thing she said when he said that there's been rising white nationalism, she said, oh, not right. He said he condemned nationalism, not rising. That's like saying, oh, you have a tumor, but it's not a growing tumor. So it's, you know, you have an okay tumor. But they will parse it that slim, that thin, to say, I'm not lying, or he didn't say that.
Yeah. And by the way, it's objectively false because you showed the numbers. This is the greatest spike in anti-Semitic incidents in 40 years. The ADL said it's the first year, 2017 was the first year where we ever had one anti-Semitic recorded incident in all 50 states. You had the worst instance of violence at the Tree of Life Synagogue. You have white supremacists marking the anniversary now with other shootings. It's getting to the point where shootings in synagogues won't even be major news very soon. And yet the hill they want to die on is, it's kind of a threat, maybe a few people, as Trump said, but not a rising threat. Now, so if you are one of these worshipers, if you're going to a synagogue, do you believe that white supremacists who like Donald Trump, anti-Semites who like Donald Trump, you can say whether he likes them or not, but they're fans of his, do they feel like they've been told not to engage in those sorts of acts? Are they actually chastened from doing it in the future? From that middling milquetoast video of Donald Trump that you saw where he said, it must be defeated. Are they defeated? Are they gonna throw down their arms? Are there not gonna be any more shootings in the future? Does anyone actually believe that that's how they will greet what he said to them?
So look, if somebody did that and they were on the left and they, you know what we would say? We hate you, we condemn you, we hope you're brought to justice in every way imaginable. You are by definition not one of us. We can go on and on. And does Trump ever get that passionate? Of course, when it's about him, no collusion, no obstruction. When it's about him, so Jews died in a synagogue. I am told I've got to read this thing about how I have sympathy for them. Well, they say, oh, well, you know, his son-in-law and his daughter is now Jewish, and his grandkids, some of his grandkids are Jewish, so yeah. But it didn't erase all those stereotypes in his head. That's why he goes to the Republican Jewish Coalition and says, yeah, nobody knows how to renegotiate better than these people here. And he says, I'm not gonna be controlled by you because you like to control your politicians. What part of that is not anti-Semitic? But bottom line is, he said at one point in the speech, he said, we will get to the bottom of it. We're gonna get to the bottom of a lot of things happening in this country. Well, you know what you're gonna find at the bottom? You. So when you encourage your base and you don't want to criticize them because you want to keep getting their votes in the next election, you know what your base is up to? And this part he might not know, but he should know, and when he eggs them on, it has consequences. So they hate Muslims, they hate Latinos, they hate blacks, and the alt-right has a debate. Should we hate all those people plus the Jews? Or should we leave the Jews out of it and just hate all those other folks, right? But the reason why a lot of the alt-right includes the Jews, and at the end of the day, there's so many attacks against Jews in America, is because when they explain their conspiracy theories about why things happen the way that they do, they have all these horrible, ugly, racist stereotypes about everybody. Oh, Latinos are lazy, blacks are violent, Muslims are ultra-violent, et cetera, et cetera. But that doesn't really explain why they're poor or they're disadvantaged, the racists themselves, why they're in such bad shape. So they need one more thing. And if you go on 8chan, you go to any of these, look, a lot of it is open on the websites. They spell it out. All these shooters talk about it. They say, yes, but the puppet masters are the Jews. They have the money. They're the ones controlling everything, including the Latinos in the caravan. Mm-hmm. Matt Gaetz talked about that. Donald Trump referred to it. So it's George Soros.
The Tree of Life shooter referred to it? The
Tree of Life shooter referred to it. So at the bottom of this horrific barrel lies anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. And if you go deep enough, they say, you know, as much as you hate blacks and Latinos and Muslims, all of that is the fault of the Jews. It's not random that they're walking into synagogues and murdering Jews all over the country. It's because that is their ideology. They can cover it up with, for the moment being, we like Israel. I mean, later it'll lead to Armageddon where they all die. But for the moment being, we kind of like it. And some of them really believe that. But when you get to the most dangerous guys in America that Donald Trump is egging on, they think it's all the Jews' fault. That's why you're seeing all these shootings at a synagogue. At a time like this, when we have the worst anti-Semitism, at least of our lifetimes, where Jews are being murdered all across the country, lukewarm, milquetoast, words in public so you don't anger your racist, anti-Semitic, bigoted base is nowhere near good enough. All right, we got to take a break, guys. We got more when we come.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
All right, back on the Young Turks, some comments. Kyla says, TYT, yay, new member here. Been watching on YouTube for a few years now, but finally upgraded to a convenient little app that lets me take my TYT everywhere. Granted, I'm on my desktop right now, teehee. Okay, well, Kyla, teehee right back at you. Thanks for being a member. TYT.com/join and become a member. And you're right, the app is super convenient. And when I'm away in DC and other places, that's how I watch. Alan says, my fear is that the Democratic establishment will foist credit card Joe Biden on us. This will result in 4 more years of Donald Trump. Ugh, we're going to talk about that in just a little bit. This new member handle I am amused by. The name is Jenk But Black. And Jenk But Black writes in, watching at 1 a.m. from Saudi Arabia, keep progressing the progressive message. Thank you, appreciate it, right back at you. Karen Shea says, if these shootings happen at a golf course, 45 would have more to say. Well, it's got to be personal for him. I'm going to do one last one because I think it's really good, and I had not considered it. On Twitter, Dare Machina said, there were many fine people on both sides of the American Revolution as well. Why do we not have statues in schools named after Benedict Arnold all over New England? That's a great question. Benedict Arnold's a traitor, but Robert E. Lee isn't? You know that Lincoln offered him command of the Union Army. He said, no, instead I'd like to wage war against America. I mean, it doesn't get a bigger traitor than Robert E. Lee. Okay, yeah. We got more stories.
Okay, let's mix it up. Beto O'Rourke has released his first policy proposal with details that we can actually break down here at TYT. And so we're going to do that. And it has to do with climate change. But does it actually go far enough? Here are some details. The plan begins with proposed executive actions, including rejoining the Paris Climate Agreement on day one and moving quickly to raise efficiency standards for buildings, cars, and appliances. Longer term executive actions include setting a net zero emissions carbon budget for federal lands by 2030 and adding more national parks and monuments to protect land and seascapes. It also allocates $5 trillion over the next 10 years to upgrade infrastructure and spur innovation, including more than $1 trillion in tax incentives to reduce emissions and $250 billion dedicated directly to research and development. So overall, what he says he's hoping to do is guarantee the United States becomes a net zero emissions country by 2050, including by instituting a legally enforceable standard in the administration's first 100 days with a goal to get there, or at least halfway, by 2030.
So I'm gonna tell you my number one concern with this plan, and then I'm curious what you guys think about it. So at first I read the headline and got genuinely excited. Because Beto O'Rourke is not a simple guy to figure out, and he doesn't have a simple record. It is a little bit all over the place, for better and for worse. And so there's many years we were very excited about Beto O'Rourke. And so, for example, he took not only a no corporate PAC money pledge, but a pledge not take money from fossil fuel executives. Then he broke that pledge and said he's not going to honor it anymore. But then in this plan, he says we're going to get rid of all fossil fuel subsidies. Long time coming. That would be great. That would be amazing. And I see the headline about how he's going to put $5 trillion in. I go, well, that's terrific. So maybe old Beto's back. You're reading the details. Look, there are good things in there. There are. It's not, again, this is more of a gray issue than anything else. And I like that everybody's moving to the left to try to get to really take care of this issue. And it shouldn't be about left and right. It is, unfortunately, because the right wing denies science. It's about saving the planet and creating more jobs. But when you read in the details, my number one concern is that not a lot of it is government money. It's money to encourage private industry to do something. And honestly, that's not good enough. So here, I'll give you an example of why I say it's not good enough. Is it because I have a fetish for government spending? No, not at all. During the Eisenhower administration, they said, no, we're going to build highways and bridges. And they created massive infrastructure that created an economic boom in this country. And they did it through the government. It was, in a sense, easier. And they didn't have to worry about who's going to make a profit off of it, who's connected, the crony capitalism, et cetera. Now, juxtapose that to what's happening today with the infrastructure bill that Donald Trump and the Democrats say that they both want. They're very clear about it. Why isn't it getting done? Because Trump says, if we're going to do it, I want to privatize it. So you pay tolls the rest of your life to my friends who I give the contract to. Well, no deal, no deal. So this is, again, privatizing the gains and socializing the costs. Just goddamn it, have the government pay for it. Yes, we would pay slightly higher taxes, but we would have great infrastructure that creates more jobs, let alone saving the planet. So when I hear, oh, don't worry, I'm gonna get corporations to do it. No, I'm worried. At a bare minimum, they're middlemen who are going to jack up the price to make more of a profit, which makes sense. They're private corporations. That's what they do for a living. But why are we paying extra? It doesn't make any sense to us.
This one it's tough because, first of all, climate change is a hard sell in America. Americans don't understand it. They don't buy into it. They're short-sighted. We are historically short-sighted and like, oh, it's gonna cost me money. They're not thinking about 2050. You know, the thing in here, like for instance, the national parks, like I'm not worried about new national parks. Let's stop destroying the ones we have. We're destroying the national park. During the government shutdown, the parks were, people just went in and went crazy because there were no park rangers to stop them, right? So they're running dune buggies all over the place and trucks and this and that. And the parks talked about the damage. And now, you know, when you talk about private corporations, they're not going to get involved till, like you said, till they see money in it. The minute Chevron sees more money in green than in fracking, then Chevron gets involved in green initiatives and so on. I don't know what kind of destruction of the planet people will have to see, because if you watch any of these documentaries, they show like, okay, this is what the heat's doing, this is where the ice melts, this is how the ocean rises, this is why the storms are worse, and this is why you're getting destroyed. People, like I said, they deny it, nah. And that's there's nothing else, just nah, I don't believe it. I mean, we're in that era, right? When anything you don't believe, you just say, no, fake news. It's just fake. Like, you don't have to, you know, and the downside of the internet is you have this scientist who's gone to school and studied and done experiments and worked and blah, blah, blah. And he knows, he or she, they know exactly what they're talking about. And they have tons of research, but they're up against an idiot with a million followers. And you were talking about it earlier, it's given a false equivalency. It's like, yeah, well, you might have went to college, but I got a million followers. And they cover it like it's the same thing, you know what I mean? And it's like, no, this is a scientist and this is an idiot. They're not the same, but they are the same. That's honestly, so when any of these climate change bills and stuff like that, to me, it's almost like you're aiming too high, because you're talking to, you know, you're trying to talk to America in a presidential election. You're trying to talk to America. And unfortunately, if you want to talk to America, you got to aim low. You got to aim low to what they understand. They don't understand. I understand what you're saying. And what you said about the government doing it, you know, my biggest problem with anti-tax, anti-government people is the government exists for the common good. The government is not a business. It's not for profit. It's what you said. It's to build roads. It's to have public schools. It's to do things to take care of the people, to raise the entire population. You know, Warren Buffett said to the Walmart family, without roads, no one gets to your stores.
Yeah.
You know.
So just slight disagreement on one thing. I hear what you're saying about it going big. The flip side, Alonzo, is if you connected to something that they care deeply about, then they want you to go big. So that's another issue with this that I think AOC and Ed Markey's bill is better at, right? So what they said is, yes, well, this is going to create a lot of jobs. Government's gonna spend, we're gonna build this energy infrastructure, a new energy infrastructure, okay? And so, and that will naturally, and every economist agrees, they might not agree about where it comes out on taxes, what the costs are, et cetera, but they all agree it would create tens of thousands of jobs, if not hundreds of thousands of jobs. So then people go, well, if you're going big to create jobs, I kind of like that, right? So that's why I say it depends. And it seems like Beto's trying to split the difference, which is pretty Beto. But I'm curious what you think, Chuck.
Yeah, so look, I am glad that he is putting out literally anything, because that is an improvement on what he and most of the other candidates have done so far, which is just, you know, give some speeches or whatever. And this is better than what we have right now, but we are, it's not like it goes out there into, you know, a context where we don't have any alternative plans. Like, we have months of discussion of the Green New Deal. And although he says that he supports it and he has in the past, this appears to be sort of thumbing his nose at the Green New Deal. This is saying, no, your interconnected plan, the Green New Deal, that integrates concerns over the environment, the economy, healthcare, environmental justice, all these different issues, and prioritizes it as the most important effort that our country needs to undergo over the next half century or so. No, we're gonna put a bunch of money into these companies and hope that they innovate us out of this disaster. And maybe they will. It's better than what we've got right now. And look, the price per capacity of batteries and the efficiency of solar cells has been improving. The industries have been doing okay in some areas, but it's not enough by itself. And he seems to really believe that a private sector way of doing this is the solution. And it also worries me. Sunrise Movement have been talking to him for some time about these issues, and they tweeted on April 30, said, we have to do everything in our power to get to net zero emissions by 2030, or as close to 2030 as we possibly can. There's not much debate around this, except that apparently there was, because within just a few weeks he had switched to 2050, which is not as close to 2030 as we possibly can. So that's him changing his position by two decades inside of 1 month. And we've seen him change on things before, on healthcare, fundamental shifts in what he thinks needs to be done to solve the problem. So when you combine the overall philosophy that seems to be going into this bill with his willingness to play fast and loose with what he says there's no debate on, he doesn't appear to me to be one of the people I would trust in this field on climate change.
Yeah, so last thing, guys, nuance, right? So is giving a subsidy to a company never a good idea? No, that's not true. Under the Obama administration, they gave some subsidies to solar companies, and Fox News made a big deal out of it for a while, and then it turned out that those subsidies worked and actually got the money back to the government and created new industries. So it does work from time to time, and so then Fox News stopped talking about it. That was partly the so-called Solyndra scandal, and they're like, this isn't playing well, they're doing really well. So they put it away. So I'm not against some sort of mix here. And if Beto had proposed this 3 years ago, we would have given him a tremendous amount of credit, because it would have been bold, it would have led the field, and it would have maybe led to some bolder plans like the Green New Deal. But today, in this context, it doesn't mean he's evil, doesn't mean he's a bad guy, and it doesn't mean this is not an improvement on today, but it is definitely not the Green New Deal. It is a different proposal that largely relies on private corporations. Two, he definitely did move the goalposts by going to 2050 instead of 2030. And so within the context of the proposals out today, it is far less progressive.
Yeah,
that's the reality.
Well, you know, just really quick, John, on moving it from 2030 to 2050, that's being a politician. There was some study that said they're not gonna buy 2030. Stretch it out. I mean, that's what they do, right? They come out with a policy, and then they say it, and then they listen to the feedback, and then they're like, okay, let me adjust it.
Yeah.
You know, so I can't fault him for that, because that's just being a politician. It's just what they do.
know. And by the way, the Sunrise Movement, obviously, I think one of the most important climate change related organizations around in America right now. They're going to be at the Democratic debates. And I had Varshini Prakash, the co-founder, on the Damage Report just a few days ago. And one of the things we talked about was, as you're watching these debates and as you're seeing the plans come out, how do you identify the people who take the Green New Deal seriously and those who are just trying to get its sort of cred without actually following what needs to be done to actually make good on it? And she had some great advice for that. So go to youtube.com/thedamagereport to find that interview.
Okay, you want to do, we got to take a break.
Yeah, we definitely have to.
All right, we'll be right back, guys. A lot of really important stories left, right?
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
Back. We hope you're enjoying this free clip from the Young Turks. If you want to get the whole show and more exclusive content while supporting independent media, become a member at tyt.com/join today. In the meantime, enjoy this free segment. All right, back on the Young Turks. All right, we're talking about something funny. Anyway, all right, Viscous Cree in our member section says, waiting until the oldest millennials are 68 before you transition the country to net zero carbon doesn't seem progressive. So that's a fair point. And so every comment is against Beto, so I'll just skip all of those, but I'm giving you the sense of the audience there. And because we're short on time, I'll read only one last one. Dare Swink says, just wanted to offer a random congrats to you all for truly having an obvious and undeniable impact on the media landscape. Seeing how many presidential candidates clearly want to make their case on your show and to your audience is as real as it gets. Well, thank you for saying that. We appreciate that. And don't miss those interviews. So Tim Ryan's up later today. So at 8 o'clock Eastern, Tim Ryan's in the studio. He's running for president, congressman out of Ohio. Should be great. I ran into John Delaney in Washington, and he is going to be coming on the program soon as well. So give everybody your attention and give them a real hearing, right? And we'll talk about the upsides and the downsides, but please keep an open mind. All right, John, what's next?
Yes, one more story for you. Fox News is technically, sort of, criticizing Donald Trump on obstruction. You're gonna watch the video, you're gonna immediately see that it looks a little bit different than their normal content, but here is Judge Napolitano talking about obstruction of justice.
When the president asked his former advisor and my former colleague at Fox, KT McFarland, to write an untruthful letter to the file knowing the government would subpoena it, that's obstruction of justice. When the president asked Corey Lewandowski, his former campaign manager, to get Mueller fired, that's obstruction of justice. When the president asked his then White House counsel to get Mueller fired and then lie about it, that's obstruction of justice. When he asked Don McGahn to go back to the special counsel and change his testimony, that's obstruction of justice. When he dangled a pardon in front of Michael Cohen in order to keep Cohen from testifying against him, that's obstruction of justice. Why not charge him? Because the Attorney General of the United States would have blocked such a charge. Because the Attorney General of the United States is of the view that obstruction of justice can only occur if you're interfering with a criminal investigation of yourself. But that's not what the obstruction statute says. And that's not what law enforcement believes, and that's not what prosecutors do. Prosecutors prosecute people who interfere with government functions. And that's what the president did by obstruction. Ordering them to break federal law to save him from the consequences of his own behavior, that is immoral, that is criminal, that is defenseless, and that is condemnable.
So that was good. Two quick things I want to mention. I like that Fox will technically allow you to criticize Trump, but you have to go stand on the street to do it. And two, that segment is it's judges' chambers. It's literally the only content they make that's not in a chamber. It's outside. But they let him do it, I guess.
It's better than when Fox and Friends goes outside. I remember when Pete Hegseth threw an axe and hit someone on the other side when he missed.
That seems made up, but it's not.
But that's a real story. Anyway, look, Judge Napolitano has been honest about this. He's very conservative. So, and then he'll say other things that drive me crazy. But that's okay. That's if you're a conservative and I'm a progressive, we're going to disagree. But he's been honest about these legal proceedings. And that's why Trump can't stand him. So now we go to Trump getting super mad, right?
Exactly. So Trump, actually, I think it's part of the video. So we're just going to go directly to that. Trump has a pair of tweets attacking Judge Napolitano, and the judge responds, sort of.
Thank you to brilliant and highly respected attorney Alan Dershowitz for destroying the very dumb legal argument of Judge Andrew Napolitano. Ever since Andrew came to my office to ask that I appoint him to the U.S. Supreme Court, and I said no, he has been very hostile. Also asked for a pardon for his friend, a good pal of low-rating Shepard Smith. Judge, good to see you this morning.
Good morning. Good morning. And this is the way you treat your friends. How do you treat your enemies? Oh, boy. Look, I thought the president's comments were brilliant. He wanted to divert attention from what Mueller had said about him and what I had commented about Mueller to his relationship with me. His relationship with me is not the story. He and I have been friends for 30 years and probably will be for the next 30 years.
But why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, in a sense, you could argue there are no winners here, because why are you friends with him? And he could turn around, Trump can, and this is a rare quasi-defense of Trump, and say, well, you said I obstructed justice, but what kind of a friend does that? Well, the kind of friend who's honest, because you did obstruct justice. So then that leads to the question, well, was Trump honest about asking for a pardon for a friend and asking to be on the Supreme Court? Well, Napolitano says, no, he was not honest about it.
Yeah.
And so do you have the quotes there? Okay, so I'll explain. So Napolitano says, look, on the asking to be on the Supreme Court, I didn't do that at all. And what he asked me, and this was apparently right after he won the election and before he became president, he said, look, who do you think should be on the Supreme Court? And Napolitano says, he said, Neil Gorsuch. And Trump said, yeah, okay, Gorsuch. And well, why? What do you like about his qualifications? Apparently Napolitano said him. And then Trump said, well, that sounds like you. And Napolitano's like, no, I'm not saying me. I'm saying Neil Gorsuch. And he's like, okay, well, then make a case for yourself. Now, hold on now. Napolitano then does make a case for himself. So I don't know if Napolitano was like pulling a Dick Cheney, right? I got this guy you'd really like. He's, you know, doesn't have much of a forehead. He's on Fox News a lot, right? Oh, no, it's Gorsuch. I don't know what you're talking about. It's Gorsuch. So I don't know. Maybe. I mean, it's not like Napolitano's an angel, right? He's been friends with Trump for 30 years, etc. But who do I trust between Napolitano and Trump? Come on, that's a no-brainer. And the Washington Post just said, a little past 860 days in his term, he just broke the 10,000 barrier. Trump has said false or misleading statements 10,000 times. He started in the beginning with 5 times a day, then he increased to 8 times a day. It is now, in the last several months, 23 lies a day that Trump says. So
that's a check, by
right,
the way.
And Napolitano gained some credibility by saying, no, when he asked me to list why I should be on the court, I did list it. Okay, so then you figure out who you believe in that. In terms of the pardon, he said, no, he asked me about a mutual friend, and I said, don't pardon him. He was actually guilty. He's like, I don't like that answer. Tell him I'm going to pardon him. So that's just a flat out lie by Trump in regards to Napolitano.
Well, when Napolitano, when he just says, if you know, this is how you treat your friends, what are your enemies? Trump has shown who he is. I mean, everybody who he's gotten rid of, double crossed, turned on, he's done this to. So why does Napolitano think, oh, he did it to me? That's like being a Kardashian, right? And wondering, like, my man is cheating. Well, he was cheating with you when you got him, right? He was with somebody else when you got him, and now he's cheating on, yeah, because that's what he does. So for him to say this, it's like, well, yeah, this is what he's done with everyone else. Why do you think it wouldn't apply to you? You know, yeah. It's ridiculous. The other thing that it's really getting funny in these Trump tweets are the nicknames. you know, like low rating Sam Shepard. And is it, if I don't know if you remember, there was a sportscaster on ESPN named Chris Berman, and he used to come up with these great nicknames for players. Like there was a guy named Bly Levin, and he'd call him Be Home Bly Levin. You know, he would just come up with these hilarious nicknames that worked with people's names. And this is what it's becoming with Trump. These nicknames are becoming, that's the funniest part of the tweet. Yeah. How much time does he spend making sure he puts that in? Like, I can never say a name without putting in some little insult or something.
Yeah, you know, no, he takes it very seriously. In fact, Natron means business. That's another Chris Berman nickname. Anyway, so listen, one more thing. Alonzo's 100% right. How could you not see it when he did it to everyone else around him? Michael Cohen, his personal attorney, now he's turned on him 100%. And now you can say, hey, listen, Cohen gave evidence about him, so maybe that's a special. No, but guys like Jeff Sessions, who was the first guy to support him, risked his career in the Senate to support Donald Trump. And then Trump, I mean, just obliterated him. Why? Because he wouldn't be, he wouldn't break the law on his behalf, and he wouldn't, and he recused himself and wouldn't protect, illegally protect Donald Trump. So Napolitano, what do you think? You were gonna give honest analysis and show that Trump is wrong on some issues, and he wasn't going to hate you, he wasn't going to turn on you? That's what he does with everybody. And you know, the last sucker at the table is the guys in the red hats. They think, oh no, no, Trump will turn on everybody in his business interests. He'll he'll go bankrupt six times just to say, ha ha, you were stupid enough to give me money and my business the way I run it, I don't pay you back, right? Now, if a homeowner did that in 2008, they'd say you're a bum. You have personal responsibility to pay that money back to the bank, right? When Trump does it with millions of dollars, they're like, genius, way to screw over people. Then he screws over everyone that supported him politically. And he screwed over everyone who gave money to his foundation, everyone who went to his university. Those two things are disbanded now, and he had to pay money because they were all scams. And you think the one guy he's not gonna scam is the poor son of a bitch who voted for him that he doesn't know at all and doesn't care about? No, you're the last sucker at the table. So when you turn around and Trump has caused a disaster for you nationwide and for you personally, you're gonna say, like, this is how he treats his friends? Exactly. Okay, we're way out of time. All right, Alonzo, thank you, man.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. AlonzoBowden.com?
Yes, AlonzoBowden.com. This Sunday at WBUR in Boston, I'm gonna be doing a live show at City Space in Boston. So come on out, you NPR nerds, I know you're out there. Come on out. City Space in Boston. TYT nerds, I just said NPR nerds because it's a wait, don't tell me thing. No disrespect to TYT nerds. I like you nerds too. TYT nerds, you're fantastic. You are quite welcome. Please join me.
And everybody check out Damage Report. If you're a member, you can already see it live in the mornings. TYT.com/join. But get the podcast. It's a really easy, convenient way to watch. Check it out on Facebook, etc. All right, we'll be right back. And we've got, is Trump done? There's some new devastating polls. I mean, you say like, oh, Trump's never done. Hold. Okay, we'll give you that story when we return.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.